Welcome, welcome everybody to Masterclass this Thursday, November 30th, 2023. If you can believe it, Christmas or holidays are coming again. Can't wait for the break. It's actually gotten cold here in Florida, so we're actually feeling like the holidays are coming. It's always nice. And almost a new year, right, Alexis? Exactly. So we will get started. We won't hold it any longer. Let's see. I have got David Cabrera. You can go ahead first if you're ready.
Do you present my slides or do I?
You do. Go ahead and hit the share and then show your slides. If you have any sound coming from your slides, you will have to tap that toggle at the top, sharing your computer sound. But if it's just you, you don't have to.
Alrighty. Sorry, I thought you guys threw it up. That's why I didn't have it
no.
up. All right. Can you guys see it?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Sorry.
No problem. So
is data value and collection? Data collection is the process collecting and processing data. Techniques from collecting data have changed over time as technology and data change, the collection of data changes. The shift from brick and mortar store to online shopping have changed strategies with more consumers visiting retail sites. I mean, other things more than that, like more broad use of electronic currency, social media. I'm a little older, so I've seen the changes. Maybe some of the younger people haven't, but there was a time where everything wasn't electronic. And that's kind of changed the landscape for data collection. The data processing life cycle, sorry, data collection, data preparation, data input, data processing, data output, and data storage. So this is basically, you know, from the collection point all the way to they store it, you know, the life cycle of the data. And then usually after storage, it gets monetized. Types of data. We have qualitative. This is basically just, you know, I would say a lot of social media stuff. These are just like opinions on events, places, behaviors, politics, thing. A lot of stuff you'd see on social media. And quantitative, that is data where it's measurable. Temperature statistics, numbers of items, more hard numbers on the quantitative. Those are the different types of data. Types of digital data collection. So one we all know is transactional tracking, tracking your purchases. With each purchase made, sellers and researchers can connect with data from third-party service providers, websites, or from e-commerce in-store point of sale system. Purchase data is a good tool in understanding consumer patterns to develop marketing plans. I mean, this is huge. I mean, everybody knows how much they swipe their cards now. And that paper money is, you know, not as common. And this information is really used to, you know, see what you're doing, when you do it, how often you do it. And they develop strategies based on this information. Social media monitoring. This is a collection technique that focuses on a person's social media history. This can be derived by posts on likes, dislikes, interests, opinions, and in many cases, just people giving up their personal information, where they went to school, who they're with, where they work, when they're going on vacation, I mean, everything. And this information can be used to create marketing strategies also. Online tracking. This data collection is done mainly with cookies to track a person's internet habits and activity. This data is collected through email campaigns, search engines, advertisements. It's another common one. And observations. This data collection method involves observing how consumers interact with websites. So literally when, you know, a lot of times in real time, where you're clicking, what you're clicking on, how often you look at it, how often you go back to it, you know. So how you interact with websites, products, and services in real time. So data preparation input. Depending on the type of data, it must be clean and prepared to be turned into information and loaded into a system. This will include removing redundant data from a set, repairing contradictory data errors and structural issues, changing the data to a machine readable format, depending on the type of information or data, and ensuring that the data is validated so no unwanted data enters the system, which is really important, especially actually for any organization. Cleaning this data is one of the main steps before data is turned into information. So basically getting it ready for whatever storage they use, depending on the type of data it is. Processing collected data. So some of the questions that should be asked when an organization procures a large data set, what advantages can be produced from data? What processes can be executed to attain these benefits, and how long will it take the organization to achieve these benefits? Some of the things that should be considered before they try monetizing it. So types of data processing. We got batch processing. This is when a computer processes a large amounts of raw data into smaller sets. Distributed processing. This is when processing is shared between a whole network of computers, almost making it into a supercomputer. This technique is used when memory-intense processing power is needed to complete the task, just sharing the load kind of. And multi-processing, this technique is used when large data set is processed by more than one central processor within a single computer. And usually this is done for multitasking, so different tasks can be done simultaneously. And real-time processing, this method is used for smaller data sets that can tolerate slight delays in processing. So data as a commodity, data has been compared with oil as a very valuable commodity. Large data sets have a very high value in the marketplace. That is a raw material like any other natural commodity. And it is huge business now. The growing profitability of the data market is projected to grow to $15.5 billion by the end of this decade. Enterprises are responding to this by changing enterprising operating models, practices, and processes due to potential profits. You actually have companies that will sell something, but they're also making money on their data. So if they're having a problem with one revenue stream, they can rely on data as a second one. Once these companies have governance practices and data management implemented, it's time them to try to monetize their data. Types of data monetization. One of them is just basically taking a set of data and doing like a one-off transaction. I'm sure it happens. I don't know how often, but I think a lot more it's like they sell insights. So they're like basing it's a platform as a service where companies can store, share, analyze data, reports that are tailor-made for the customer, but they turn it more into a service. Ecosystem partners, data is sold to companies who use data aggregator to sell insights and customer trends, and embedded data and insights or embedded acquired data and insights into existing products to enhance it and these are pretty much all the major ways that they monetize data. I mean, there are more, but these are some of the big ones. And that's pretty much it. And I was very nervous, and thank you.
No worries. You did a great job. Absolutely. Any questions for David? I'm sorry that Landon missed it. He loves his data.
Yeah, I love this topic.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, well, then we will move on to our next presenter, Daniel Crowder, if you are ready to go.
All righty, I'm a bit nervous too, which is hilarious because I do like a weekly meeting. You think this would be no big deal.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, no, it's weird. Can everybody hear me clearly and all right?
Yes.
You got this, Daniel.
Oh, yeah. All right, here we go. All right, I'm doing my presentation on the future of smart homes. And can everybody see the slides okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. I've been having issues with it, but here we go. All right, so one of the primary considerations for users when we add anything to our homes, to our home networks, is security. In the case of smart home devices, there were documented cases of over 12,000 attempts to breach smart home devices in one single home over the course of a week. That's a pretty crazy statistic, but that's just from one single home. If every device can connect to the internet on its own terms in our smart home, then it will simply be more vulnerable to attack. So that's something we have to keep in mind when we're building our smart home. Security against would-be attackers is one thing, but we also have to consider something that kind of correlates to the previous topic that was just spoken about, how much data organizations sell from the products that they sell to us. They collect that data and then sell it to other companies. They send that data back to their manufacturers, and they don't very often explain what they do with that data clearly anyway. Even when strong consumer privacy laws such as the GDPR apply, manufacturers often use blanket statements and do not explicitly explain where the data goes and why. And the reason that they often do it that way is because they can avoid liability under those laws if they just use a blanket statement that can kind of skirt around it. Let's see. So if security and privacy were not enough, there's one more significant hurdle most smart homes face, and that's internet connectivity. Internet connectivity is helpful for a smart home, but can also be a significant detriment. For starters, it creates the opportunity for your privacy and security to be compromised, but it does allow you to connect remotely to your smart home, which can be a big benefit, of course. On the other hand, if your smart lights can only be turned on and off when you have internet access, there will likely be times when you cannot use your smart home functions. Now that we all know some of the problems smart homes present, we can address those problems with solutions that make sense for us, the users. The future of smart homes will likely always include internet connectivity, but will be based on a locally managed core rather than one managed by an outside organization that precludes you from many of the decisions on what to share and how to share it. With a self-hosted smart home platform, you can combine devices from different manufacturers and ecosystems, allowing you to choose the best product for your situation and how those products connect to the internet. You can decide if you want to enable external assistance, such as Google or Alexa, to be able to access your devices, or if you would prefer to host your own assistant. Home Assistant is one solution that's currently available, and it is an open source Linux-based operating system working to bring privacy, security, and customizability to smart homes. Home Assistant allows users to host its software on a variety of devices, from Raspberry Pis and an all-in-one solution with the operating system pre-installed. You can install it on a spare computer that you have laying around at the house, a small home server, or even on a NAS running Docker. That would be fine too. Since most users will likely have one of these options available, it is possible to get started with minimal investment, making it ideal for those who want to try it but are not sure it makes sense for their home. Best of all, many devices can be used without an internet connection at all. What makes this software incredibly versatile is its support for Wi-Fi, Zigbee, Z-Wave, Bluetooth, and thread-based wireless communication protocols. Not only is it compatible with those standards, but via included integrations or integrations created by the community, it can communicate and interact with products from Amazon, Google, Sony, HomeKit, Plex, Samsung, IKEA, Philips, Sonos, Ecobee, and hundreds of other brands encompassing thousands of products. Some of those integrations are on display in this screenshot here from my Home Assistant installation. Using devices that connect via mesh networks and the Home Assistant operating system, it is possible to build a smart home that functions faster and has fewer interruptions than one built on an internet-only platform. Home Assistant can be used to create powerful automations by allowing us to combine devices from a variety of manufacturers, allowing it to do some pretty incredible things. In my home, I have many motion sensors that turn my lights on and off to save money on my electric bill and make things more convenient for me. I also have dogs, so when I leave the house, I don't want them to activate my lights. So I use an automation that turns off motion sensors. It turns off electronics, turns off televisions and lights that were left on. And the screenshot that I provided here is that away automation built in the GUI of Home Assistant. It contains conditions that check for time of day, so the dogs aren't left in the dark. If it's dark outside, it'll leave certain lights on. It checks if other automations are activated, such as guest mode, so that we don't turn the lights on if we have people visiting from out of town. Another example of an automation I use is a time-based lighting levels to avoid having bright lights wake me up if I need to get up and sing Twinkle Twinkle for my daughter in the middle of the night. I highlight what automation I use in my home to provide some context on creating your own automation. Home Assistant provides the friendly GUI accessible via computer and a mobile app that can be used from your phone and even converted into a dashboard displayed on a low-cost tablet and attached to your wall to make control centers wherever you would like to place them in your home. The GUI allows for creating automation via a wizard, or if you want to get into extreme customization, YAML programming. You can even switch between the two on the fly to see behind the scenes. The two screenshots that I've provided here are an example of an automation in the GUI up top, and then down below, that's the exact same automation in YAML programming, and all it takes is a quick little checkbox there, and you can switch between the two. So for people who love programming and really love to get into extreme customizability, the YAML programming aspect of Home Assistant has some really powerful abilities. You can create custom graphics, change the GUI, create custom buttons, custom presence sensors, which can be made from a combination of devices. It's actually a pretty useful With Home Assistant, you can connect local network shares as well that contain media, pictures, audio recordings, or graphics that you want displayed on smart TVs or played over your smart speakers. The automation you see here on the left side is one that turns off my daughter's lights, turns on her television, and then plays a piano aquarium video hosted on my local server to help her go to sleep, all with the press of just one button. You can also choose if you would like to be able to connect your smart home from the internet or not. So you can connect it to the internet or not. It's up to you. There's no requirement for that. Even the mobile app will work through a local link on your own Wi-Fi. So if you choose to use the mobile app but don't want your Home Assistant connected to the internet, you can still use the mobile app when you're on your home Wi-Fi. So that can be very handy to have a portable smart home interface in your pocket or on a tablet in your home. You can also choose if you want to allow smart home to integrate with Alexa or Google Assistant. And that choice takes away some of your privacy because it does have to expose entities to the product that you use, such as Google or Alexa. However, you do get the granular decision on exactly which entities, and by entities, those would be things like lights, motion sensors, but of course, a lot of motion sensors will have multiple entities built into them, such as a Lux light sensor to see how bright your room is. They might have a temperature sensor built in, and each one of those would be a separate entity. So you would be able to choose whether you wanted just the motion sensor portion of that to be exposed to Google and not your temperature or your Lux sensor. The same would apply to cameras. For example, I use a few cameras in my home that I have firewalled off, which allows me to maintain security so that I can't contact the outside world, but I can still utilize them within my home through Home Assistant to display them on smart TVs or my telephone or tablets. So by using this, you get a very high level of control over your privacy, which is one of the things that I believe is the future of smart homes. So I've gone over a lot in this presentation here. There is a lot that I did not touch on that is available in Home Assistant and that you can do with Home Assistant. I just wanted to give everybody an idea of what the future of smart homes is most likely to be, because it makes sense from a convenience, privacy, and security point of view. In the future, if there are more intense consumer privacy laws passed, then this would be one way to make sure that companies can adhere to those laws, or it just would currently provide you with the ability to take back some of your own privacy and security without exposing your smart home to the internet and still having the ability to use smart devices within your home, have those smart video cameras. And if you do choose to expose it to the internet, you can do it through a encrypted VPN directly through it, so that when you tunnel into it, then you're getting a private connection and it's not going to be sending a lot of data out that you're not allowing it to. And that's pretty much all I had for my presentation. Are there any questions or comments?
Excellent job. Isn't it fun that you can do that? You can turn things on, and it's like, I had that until we have a every time we have a storm, I have to reset everything. But yes. I have that same thing where I can just turn something on, or the lights will come on automatically on their own at 5 o'clock or when it gets dark and go off in the morning.
The best thing about Home Assistant is if you host it on your own home server, and you have a small battery backup on your router and a battery backup on the hosting machine, then you'll never have issues with the power going out, knocking any of your stuff out. You'll still be able to control it all. It's actually phenomenal. Wow. There's some users who have taken old corded telephones and created their own voice assistants in Home Assistant, because it gives you the capability to do that, your own personal voice assistant.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and you can pick up the telephone and talk to your voice assistant. It's kind of a geeky thing, but it's really awesome, I thought.
That's funny. That is funny. Wow. You never know, right? I'm still learning.
Daniel.
Yes.
Have you ever thought of broadcasting?
I've actually had that that suggestion quite a few times, but yes, to be honest, radio does not pay a lot.
You're right. But we want him to do we want him to do some of the tutorials for us. That would be awesome. Yes, he's got that voice, definitely.
I actually did think about recording a couple of those. I might be able to fit that in before I graduate.
Oh yes, and even afterwards when you come back, it'd be perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
We don't let anybody leave.
Yeah, we must stay.
You must. Thank you so much. That was awesome. Very good. All right. Julia Ward, are you ready?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can.
All right. My voice isn't going to be as good as his. I am really sick. So if I pause, it's because I'm coughing.
No problem. Take it easy. Okay. Go slowly. That's fine.
It's been very unexpected.
I'm sure.
Can you all see it all right?
Yes, we do see the PowerPoint. Yep, there you go.
All right. I'm speaking about managing technology in a changing world. Our technology is always changing. In her book, Technological Revolutions and Financial Capital, Carlota Perez explains the evolution of business, society, and financial cycles based on her analysis of five significant technological revolutions over the past three centuries. Her research finds major discoveries that led to new periods of technology, the Industrial Revolution, leading to the age of steam and railways, the age of steel and heavy engineering. One thing to think about is that project management started in the late 1800s during the age of steel. Finally, there's the present, age of software and digital. After each new discovery, there's a new time of growth and deployment with new sets of processes formed until the next great discovery. AI will more than likely start the next period. It probably already is the next period. In addition to the technological periods, we live in a VUCA world in regards to technology. It's a volatile world that we can't always predict. We manage it by having a shared vision that is flexible. We are often uncertain because of new changes that don't have a history. We manage it by understanding through experiments. Technology becomes more complex in a global society. We manage complexity through clarity with good communication and teamwork. Work is often ambiguous due to changing norms. We manage it using agility with agile principles and practices to change as needed. As technology changes, people are generally in one of these areas. Innovators, early adopters, the early majority, the late majority, laggards, which some people always want their fax machine even when they're gone. You can say where you are within the chasm. I am typically within the early adopters because I do not want to be too far out front or too far behind. The key point is the chasm from the early majority to the early adopters. Once the early majority starts to move over, the rest will start to come. And then innovators are often the next thing. For technology, it is important for leaders to communicate across the chasm in order to manage changes. To enable lasting behavioral change, communicate three more times than you think you need, and you are a third of the way there. John Cotters has 8 steps to leading change across organizations. This applies to technology changes. If you cannot describe your vision to someone in 5 minutes and get their interest, you have more work to do in this phase of a transformation process. We should be able to easily describe the vision. goals of our product and team. These are the 8 steps Cotter recommends on how to approach a change. It starts with a sense of urgency, and each step takes you along the way to promote change. One of the key steps is generating short-term wins to show people how the change will be beneficial. The last step is when the change is complete and you start back on to change the next changes. One way we manage technological change is when Mick Kirsten talks about moving from a project mindset to a product mindset. Notice the balance between projects and products. You can compare each box in the project column and then the product column. A project has a start and an end, whereas a product is open until they are retired. Note that we do projects within the context of products. Mick Kirsten says, the problem is not with our organizations realizing that they need to transform. The problem is that the organizations are using managerial frameworks and infrastructure models from past revolutions to manage their business in this one. Applying management frameworks from 100 years ago to organizations that need to complete in the digital age is futile. Just think about the Gantt chart. It actually started around 1912. Jonathan Smart proposes that we handle change and how we work by focusing on patterns and anti-patterns of how we work. He talks about better, value, sooner, safer, happier. Better is about quality that is built in rather than expected in later. With smaller slices of value, there are fewer incidents and outages. There's less rework, less failure demand, more time is spent proactively rather than reactively. Value is why you are doing what you are doing. It is of value to someone. It could be financial. It could be maintaining public safety. It could be charitable. Objectives and key results enables agility in order to maximize value or have the cheapest cost of failure. Sooner is time to market, time to learning, to locking in progress and value early and often. Lead time is the time from starting work on an item of value to getting it into the hands of the customer. Throughput is a count of items of value delivered into the hands of a customer in a given time period. As lead time comes down, throughput should go up. Safer is a governance, risk, and compliance, information security, data privacy, regulatory compliance, and resilience in chaos. It is customers trusting your organization. Happier covers the satisfaction from customers, colleagues, and citizens. When you are going through the technological change, the recommendation is to start with why focus on outcomes. Better, value, sooner, safer, happier. Leaders go first. Invite over inflict, as in invite someone instead of making them do it. Involve everyone from the top to the bottom. Become a relearning organization. You're never done learning. The final quote is from John Cotter, who's a leader for change. Leadership is about setting a direction. It's about creating a vision, empowering and inspiring people to want to achieve the vision, and enabling them to do so with energy and speed through an effective strategy. In order to manage technology in this changing world, we need this type of leaders to give us vision and guide us through changes. And this is my references if anybody has any questions.
Fantastic job. You have the job. That's it. You talked about Thank leadership. You got it.
Thank you.
Good thing you're a lead. Yep, you got it. That was great. That helps a lot. And I have to say, I'm the one who's like, oh, look, new toy. I'm over all the way to the left. I'm the first one out there.
I can understand you on that one.
Yeah, right. Give me, I want to try.
My turn.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's see who's next. Muhammad, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Can you all hear me well?
Yes, I can.
Do you see my screen?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
All
right. All right, so I would like to go over an introduction, and here it is. All right, so hello, everyone. We know how cybersecurity is becoming more important day by day, and that is why I believe that all of us should have some knowledge about basic yet essential cybersecurity practices in our daily lives so that we can stay prepared beforehand and not let any situations arise. In this era of constant connectivity, implementing robust cybersecurity practices is becoming extremely important. For this purpose, this presentation will be relevant to all of us, and I will not get into too many technicalities in this presentation, but use an easy-to-understand approach for us all. With that being said, let us start today's presentation discussing the essential cybersecurity practices for everyday users or internet users. So let's start with the basics. The first line of defense should be your password. Avoid the buzzword password 123. Instead, opt for a combination of upper and lower case letters, numbers, and symbols. I would recommend consider using a sequence of words that holds personal meaning to make it both strong and memorable. Now let's talk about two-factor authentication. After building on strong passwords, add an extra layer of defense with two-factor authentication. I know that it might sound too much, but let me explain it to you in simple terms. In this system, you can consider two-factor authentication as a secondary verification step. In this system, often a code is sent to your mobile device when making login to any of your existing accounts. Now, I guess you all will agree that it is not that very difficult to understand. This simple yet effective step reduces the risk of unauthorized access, even if your password is compromised. Cyber attackers do not need a second invitation if they discover software vulnerabilities in your devices. Regularly updating the software of your smartphone, computer, or other devices will help. Now you may ask, how can I do software updates? In your Android or iOS or Windows devices, it is enabled by default, so you do not need to worry about it. Antivirus is one term that I believe all of you have heard before. Now let's understand what antivirus software is. Antivirus software works as your digital shield. It scans, detects, and removes malicious files and software from your devices. I would recommend you invest in a reputable antivirus programs to safeguard your digital space. All right. Here we shall briefly understand what phishing awareness is. Cybercriminals may try phishing attempts. You need to be vigilant against deceptive emails, messages, or website trying to trick you into revealing sensitive information. Verify the source before clicking any links, and remember, your bank won't ask you for a password via email. In today's scenario, phishing attempts have become very dangerous. This is one area where internet users must be aware on their own to neglect such attempts by cyber criminals. I guess many of you have a high-speed internet or high-speed broadband connection in your home. But do you know that cyber threats can also occur through your home Wi-Fi network? Well, it indeed does. Your home Wi-Fi is the gateway to your digital world. Secure it with a strong, unique password. We have already discussed password security in an earlier slide. Keep those things in mind when setting up a password for your home Wi-Fi. On top of that, I would also recommend you use WPA3 encryption for enhanced protection. It is also important to avoid public Wi-Fi, such as in coffee shops and subway stations, for sensitive transactions. Next, you need to review and adjust your social media privacy settings. From these apps, cybercriminals can know a lot of details about you, and if they find it appropriate, then they might attack you or target you. That is why you need to spend some minutes securing it. I would not ask you to delete your accounts forever, but still, there are a few things that you can definitely do yourself to tackle this potential cybersecurity threat. A few things that you can do in your favorite and most used social media apps, such as Facebook and Instagram, is to limit the information visible to the public. You can lock your Facebook account with some simple steps, and I want to show you a quick video how to do that.
We don't see the video. We can't hear it either. You'll have to turn on the computer sound.
I'm sorry. You cannot hear the video sound?
No. When you click share, you turn on the computer sound. There's a toggle at the top right. So you might have to reshare.
Oh, sorry. Let me see. Okay. Sorry for that.
No problem. Okay.
If you want to log your Facebook profile, log into your Facebook account. Once you log in, tap the three lines at the top right corner. Once you tap these three lines, you'll have to scroll a bit down and you'll have to tap the last option, settings and privacy, just above logout. Then you'll have to tap the very first option, that is settings. Once you tap the option settings, you'll have to tap the very first option again, that is profile settings. Once you tap the very first option, profile settings, you'll be taken to the next page and you'll have to tap the option profile locking. Once you tap the option profile locking, it would show you that you can lock your profile. Just click the last button, blue button, and your profile would be locked. Thank you very much for watching. Your profile has been locked.
All right. So overall, you need to be mindful of what you share. You should maintain your own privacy. You know that most apps that you use on your devices request various permissions, including your location, phone number, email ID, gallery access, calendar access, and so on. However, some apps often request more than they need. You have to regularly review and manage these permissions. This way, you will be able to minimize the risk of unauthorized access to your personal data. Only grant access when necessary. We use email regularly, but do you know that even email is a common vector for cyber threats? You have to make sure that you do not click on suspicious links sent to your email, especially by unknown senders. Also, do not download attachments from unknown sources. In spite of all these measures, you still might become a victim of cyber attacks. This is why I would ask all of you to prepare yourselves for the unexpected by regularly backing up your data. You can allow your devices to automatically back up your data. In the event of a cyber incident, having a recent backup will save you a lot of time. The IoT, or Internet of Things, brings convenience, but it can also cause vulnerabilities. After buying a new IoT device, such as a new Amazon Alexa Echo Dot, the first thing I would do is to change the default passwords on them. I would also update firmware regularly. I hope you also do the same. All right. So you may have kids in your houses, and the chances are they use smartphones more than they should be. You need to educate them about online safety. You can set up parental controls on the devices, use kids mode on your Android devices, and try child-friendly apps such as YouTube Kids for their safety. We must not forget that cyber threats evolve. Staying informed about the latest cybersecurity trends and threats will be very important. To do so, we can read newspapers or tech-related websites such as The Verge, Gizmochina, TechRadar, etc. to keep our knowledge up to date. In the online world, we must ensure that we are using our devices properly to stay away from any cyber-related threats to occur. The consequences can make your life difficult, to say at least. In conclusion, I can say that cybersecurity is a shared responsibility. By implementing the above mentioned practices, you will be able to protect yourself. And in this digital environment, our motto should be stay vigilant, stay secure. And that ends my presentation. These are the references I used for the presentation. And that is all. If you guys have any question.
Fantastic. That was awesome. Still looking in my phone to see how to lock everything in.
I'll find a question the video. Real quick.
Go ahead.
Speaking of the evolving threats, have you run across a AI-generated voice telephone call that's basically phishing, using an AI voice? It's actually really creepy and uncanny because it's very close and darn near perfect for a human voice. But if you pay really close attention, things like cadence and speech patterns aren't right for like a human generated voice, and you can tell. It also takes too long to respond when you ask it questions, as if it were it not just it like it's like it's processing basically. Have you ever run across one of those?
No, I haven't. I actually am still learning phishing, and I'll definitely, you know, try that.
Yeah, you should look it up. I'm sure somebody's recorded one, but I've actually had a couple of those phone calls come through to my cell phone from people claiming to be with like health companies and things asking for personal information. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got one
great
for
presentation.
Health. Yeah, I got one for the police. What do they have? That you know, sending money to them. To help with the police. You can tell right away because it doesn't answer correctly. You say hello and it takes too long.
Yeah, it takes about a couple seconds, you know, and then starts.
Yeah.
But you can really tell it's automated. Yeah.
And the police one, the automated, he's like, yeah, hi. Or, you know, hey, this is Jennifer. And I'm here to call you about this. I'm like, I never signed up for that. I don't know you, Jennifer.
And yeah, sometimes they do so perfect. They put like background noise of real people, so you know there's a real crowd, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, need to look out for those. Excellent job, thank you very much. That was good.
Thank you.
Okay, and now we have Sonali. Are
yes, you ready? I'm ready.
Okay.
Let me share my screen. Good evening, everyone. I'm going to present the AI-based project planning and the project management, which is very easy using the AI tools. And I have also the couple of AI tools, the case studies, which I just find out through the Google and some of the a company which is using that. I was not able to find out the project names because that's confidential information which is AI is not sharing, but we had enough information. Okay, so efficiency is important for successful project management, and artificial intelligence is set to change this field in a big way. With AI, project managers can make their planning smoother, use resources better, and reduce risk. In this presentation, we will learn about effective planning and see how AI can make a huge difference in project management. By using the AI tool, we have some benefits. I'm just going to discuss all the benefits, not the cons, because I'm here to just present the AI tools for the project management. So with the AI tools, we can improve the decision making. Like AI being integrated helps make a better decision by using data analysis and insight, leading to smart choices throughout the project's life. It can also provide the better efficiency. It analyzes huge sets of data, making processes smoother, automating tasks, and constantly monitoring the progress, which overall makes project management more efficient and more smoother releases. It can also reduce the risk. AI knack for smarting pattern and predicting outcome help anticipate possible risk, allowing proactive steps to reduce errors and prevent risk from becoming bigger problems. For example, if release can be canceled, we cannot deliver stuff on the deadline. So this everything can be on track by AI tools. It has the features like AI can predict the timeline. For example, if the any project manager is working on the timeline for budgeting the proper hours, then AI can help them by using the historical data to create the real-time factors, enabling proactive adjustment to ensure the timely delivery. This contributes to improve the project efficiency and success. It can also help for the task management, like it has the leverage algorithm and predictive analytics to optimize the task assignment and allocate resources efficiently. Also, it can use the resource between the two teams, like one for the support, one for the project development. So it's better efficient for the resource assignment. By automating these processes, organizations can maximize productivity, minimize delays, and ensure successful project completion. AI also enables real-time adjustment and adaptability, improving overall project efficiency and success rates. Because in the nowadays, we have to 80 to 90% projects, which is ongoing every day, which is starting, but it can be failed most of them because of the improper management or the some of the risk. So AI can help that. The AI tools. I am presenting some case studies highlight and some AI tool example, which can help for the successful implementation of AI in project management across various industries. From streamlining communication and collaboration to optimizing resource allocation and risk prediction, this example demonstrates how AI can revolutionize project management and deliver more efficient and successful outcomes. So the first one is the DART. Maybe you can also Google it. DART is an artificial intelligence-driven project management application, which is developed to streamline and automate project management. DART's GPT-4 technology allowed teams to spend less time on administrative activities and more on real project work, saving up to the third of the time normally spent on the project management. So the platform streamlined interface and rich keyboard shortcut make it ideal for productivity. We can also set here our preferable keyboard shortcuts for daily routine activities. DART paves the way for teams to organize tasks, subtasks, and projects and seamlessly roll over sprint cycle with total freedom of action. So if we are working with the Agile, then we can also manage all the sprint time to time and depend on the modules. In addition, DART may be adjusted to accommodate the unique routine of different groups, hence improving coordination across department and personnel. DART also provides many connectors with common applications like email, Slack, GitHub, and Notion, allowing teams to collaborate effectively across the devices without moving between the application. The test.io, the organization which is working for the QA services, which is basically handling the defects, providing the quality analysis team for any project work, which organization is using the Dart as a their project manager. So that's a real-time scenario example. The next one is ANZA. So it's easy to navigate, and it comes with a wide variety of project management templates. And it also has the template for creating a report and a newsfeed board with chat functions so that you can stay in touch with your team through a social media. Like the right side there, the screenshot, which is just narrowed down. But we can manage the team such like we are managing the social media. So it's a very easy tool to create a custom report and valuable details. For ANZA, I didn't find out any real world example, but I have for others. Process tree. Business maybe use the process tree to manage processes and improve efficiency. The system is driven by ChatGPT, which is automate work on project and boost the productivity. Its main function include the project management, deliverable tracking, automated check-ins, enhanced data analytics, and routine job management. Slack, Zapier, and Trello are just a few project management apps that may be integrated with ProcessTree. And ProcessTree is used by the Accenture and the Cisco for their some of the project manage. The next one is StepSize. So for comprehensive task and project tracking, StepSize AI proves to be a valuable tool. It simplifies project management by consolidating tasks and project into a centralized platform. The AI-powered observation of StepSize analyzes project data, offering intelligent suggestion to enhance the productivity. It can suggest for like we can use this two resource for between the two that project, like some of the hours for this dedicated timelines and some of time for the research. So it can suggest a very better ways to manage the resources and manage the time. It's identified the bottlenecks and optimize the resource utilizations. And StepSize is using by the Adumi. The Adumi is organization who is training the customer and providing the training for like whatever the project is going to release or some of the application. So it's basically the training based software. And also the other, I have the example, that's a Nuoda. So Nuoda is an e-commerce platform, which is something like the Shopify. We can create the multiple e-commerce based website automatically on the Nuoda. And Nuoda is using this StepSize tool as a project manager. The next one is ProofUp. ProofUp emerged as a smart AI-driven project management solution that enhanced team collaboration and operational efficiency. The AI in ProofUp monitor essential metrics such as task distribution and team availability, providing timely alert and insight. Furthermore, ProofUp AI automates the project reporting, giving project manager more time to concentrate on their primary duties. So ProofUp is, I think, the preferable, and it's also trusted by like University of the Michigan, Netflix, and the Nike. So it has a better functionality. I did the research on the report one. It was a pretty easy one to understand. And I think it's also helping for everyday task and timeline for the project manager. The next one is the Project Insight. So the capability of the Project Insight make it preferred choice for teams seeking effective collaboration and real-time project management. Teams may manage project more effectively with the help of this software, which helps with resource management, cost estimation. This is the new feature that we found in the Project Insight, and the deadline planning. Real-time update ensure teams stay informed about ongoing projects and fostering transparency and agility. So Project Insight is used by the Paycor organization, and Paycor is the HR software. Most of the small businesses are using the Paycor as their HR software to manage their employee. The second last one is the like Solidly. The AI-powered project management assistant, Solidly AI, helps cut unnecessary meeting and boost output. This is the great feature, right? The primary goal of this application is to let its user focus on the work at hand while still receiving important notification and information. Solidly AI notifies team member when changes are needed, distributes the personalized instruction to partner teams, and coordinates messaging for end users. It also monitors incoming text messages, allowing user to silence interruption by disabling alert. I like it. By employing AI to keep tabs on the particular and lessons, the time spent playing catch up. Solidly AI helps team overcome the challenges of constant interruption from pings, meetings, and other sources. The tool aims to reduce interruption and free users' attention to concentrate on the task. So this is the Solid AI. It's a great tool. The last one is ClickUp. I think this is my favorite one. One notable player is in this arena is ClickUp AI, a platform that offers a personalized project management software assistant. This AI-driven assistant helps streamline tasks from condensing meeting notes to creating action items. ClickUp AI supports several workflows such as Agile, Scrum, and Kanban, and offer the features like pre-structured headers and tables to ensure flexibility for a range of project management methodologies. And ClickUp is used by the Frontinet, which is a cybersecurity organization. Also, with ClickUp is used by the Booking.com. I think everybody knows that one. And also used by the Spotify. Spotify is one music application. They have the other application as well, but they are using the ClickUp as well. So they are the very big client for the ClickUp. That was the last one tool that I found. Maybe there is many more tools that I would require to research, but I think I like the ClickUp. In the conclusion, like this is the AI world. So the way we plan project in the future is connected to AI. As machine learning and the predictive analytics get better, they will keep making projects work smoother and more successful. To keep up in fast-changing business world, it's important to welcome AI. In summary, using AI in project planning has a lot of promise for making things more efficient and ensuring project success. For companies that want the best outcome for their project in today's competitive world, adopting AI technologies is really important. I have the references, and thank you. Any questions?
So this is really great to see. And I'm wondering, is there something, an AI project planning system that we could use in the internship? Maybe that's free.
Yeah, so the tools that I present, among them, there are the two tools which is providing free version for limited edition, but that's also the greater one for manage the task and the resource alignment. I can do the more research and can bring up one report.
Because you were saying ClickUp, it seems like that one might be a good one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm wondering if it's something that maybe we can get through them and maybe they'll give it to us free, being that it's an internship, but we'd have to see, of course.
Yeah.
See how that goes. Anyone have any other? Yeah, I mean, in whatever we can use, because if we don't have enough project management interns, we can at least have the system, and it's always good for us to start some AI as well, however that might be. Anyone else have any other questions for Sonali? Well, I have to say, everybody did a wonderful job. A lot of information. I love it. Never want to miss these masterclasses, I'm telling you. So is there anybody, I guess, last chance, if you want to go ahead and do your presentation now, seeing how well everybody else did, if you're ready and you have done yours already and you can switch out We do have some time that we can use. Maybe, you know, throw in one more and be out of here by 9:30. It's up to you. I do have three students now that will have to find a way to get their presentations done since I don't have any more times open. That's the hot spot. That's really just, you know, if you miss out, you lose out. So you have to do it in the weekly status meeting, in the weekly meetings. And there's only so much time to be able to do that too, because of course the courses, the meetings have to cover the topics of interest for that meeting. So anybody raise your hand if you've got one.
How do you feel about impromptu speeches?
Like you just come up with it now instead of having something made? I mean, you can do a live one too if it's something that you're going to show how something was done and it's live, you know, like you're showing it off the internet or however you're doing it.
Maybe next week.
Okay. I don't know, because we're two hours out on all these other weeks. So that's the problem. So it would have to be. That's why I needed someone to switch with the interns that we had. And if you switch, you get it done now, but then I can go ahead and give them a spot later on. So I thank everybody, though. You had some great presentations. Absolutely wonderful. I am working on setting up that project to go and have someone upload those to PGI Pods. That way, once it is on there, you can say that you've been published. And because you have been, you'll be up there on PGI Pods. PGI Pods is also connected to a few Spotify and iHeart and a few other places. So you're going to get out there. Your voice is going to get out there. So
oh, now just, you're just creeping me out. No, that's it. I'm okay with it. It's no worries.
Well, you've got the voice for it, so you don't have to worry about it.
Well, I mean, I felt like I was like kind of stuttering a bit during my presentation from nerves. Everybody else, excellent presentations, guys. Really good job. Isn't it funny?
You do meetings all the time and then presentation, you're like, oh my God, now it's me and all eyes are on me. And it's like, well.
I think it's because you put so much more work into this one because it's like longer, you know, whereas the weekly one, it's a few days worth of prep for that. Maybe.
Right. And it's just the small group, too. This is a big one. Definitely presenting.
I should have had Daniel do my voiceover.
Right. Definitely.
I owe somebody after Nikki helped me out with those slides in the AHOD meeting, man. That saved my bacon that day just because it was so, my computer just kept crashing. I figured out, by the way, if anybody's having issues presenting through Teams on Windows 11, if it keeps crashing on you when you try to share your screen or your web browser, turn off HDR if you have it on. That seems to be what was going on with mine.
Isn't that funny? It's always something. That's why I'm not getting 11 right away. Get the bugs out. You got to turn things off.
A quick question. Good evening, everyone. PGI Pods. Is it PGI, like a podcast? Like, is the presentation, like the 15-minute presentation going to be uploaded to that podcast?
The masterclass recording will be on PGI Pods. So they can either watch it or they can preferably watch it, of course, because you guys have presentations, but they can listen to it as well. It doesn't work as well if it's a presentation. It doesn't work as well, you know, if it's a podcast, but if it's a viewable podcast, it does work good. So, but with pgipods.com, which is what we handle, I make sure that all the masterclasses are on there.
Ah, okay. Awesome. PJPods.com. Okay. Yep. Thank you.
You're welcome. Jaden?
Hello. So do you need someone for the 23rd of December for the masterclass?
No. I needed someone for tonight so they could switch because the term for they end on the 19th and the 23rd of December for these individuals, and they needed to switch over to do. They needed to take someone, you know, to swap dates.
Okay.
They are leaving the 19th and the 23rd of December, so they need to do them now before it gets too close, and I don't have any other openings for December, so it's tight.
I wish I had a presentation, but sadly right? I don't.
Is yours done? No, you're not. Okay.
I mean, the closest thing I could do is like do an impromptu how to make a Unity game
right
or something.
I know.
But that would require preparation beforehand either way.
Right. Because you want to know what you're talking about and stuff too. Exactly.
And have all the files prepared and all that.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well.
What's the exact list? Oh, sorry.
My presentation is going to be in January. But if we absolutely need, I don't know if that would work with switching with them, but I could just do an impromptu presentation on body-worn cameras through Axon.
Yes, and then again, it would have to be tonight. And they are leaving on the 19th and the 23rd of December, so they have to do it by then. Thank you, though. So,
What's the exact link for the PGI pods? I can't find it. I could just read the instructions wherever you guys.
Yeah, here, hold on. Let me get it for you.
Thank you.
Copy. I'll put it in the chat. There we go.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. https://www.pgipods.com. Huh. Didn't have a little picture there. I wonder why it doesn't have a little picture right there. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. You did a great job. Don't forget to put that on LinkedIn. Absolutely upload it. I mean, you know, once we get this out, and if you can download it and grab your part of the masterclass, make a little video of it, put it up in your LinkedIn so they can see it. You'll probably get a job like that. It's no promises, but it's a possibility. I'm telling you, because these presentations are great, and they love to see the initiative of what you guys are doing. So I think you've done a great job. Congratulations for getting this done. Now, of course, if you're a master's student, you may have your first or second one to do, depending. Now, of course, because I have Sonali just got her second one done, which is good. And then I have, I think, two students who were supposed to do the first ones. Now they're going to have to do two ones unless I can swap or do something with that. So we'll play with the schedule as much as we can to get that done. Thank you so much. Congratulations, and have a good rest of the evening and weekend. Be safe.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.